Welcome to Keeping the Faith. I'm Beth Gelman. Thank you for joining me as we examine religion, faith, spirituality, and what it means to believe, to hope, to search. In this space, you'll be hearing from artists and clergy, scientists, philosophers, and other seekers of meaning. We'll be exploring themes like prayer, ritual, grief, music, and wonder. Today, we are dipping our toes into the subject of faith and belief. With me in the studio is Reverend Jim Andrews, who is currently serving as the chaplain for Westminster Palms, a retirement community here in downtown St. Pete. I met Jim in his previous role as Director of Spiritual Care at Suncoast Hospice, part of Empath Health, while we were putting together one of my first exhibitions at Creative Pinellas, called The Things They Left Behind. Jim oversaw several public programs on grief and remembrance during that show. He and I had several wonderful conversations, including about his experience attending to people of all religious philosophies, including agnostics and atheists who were at the end of their lives. I'm really excited for all of you to hear from him. Thanks for being with us, Jim.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to start by asking you to tell us a little about your background and what led you to chaplaincy work in general, and then specifically to hospice care.
Okay, yeah. It's interesting, actually, because hospice really found me first, and then I found my vocation. From a really young age, I knew I wanted to devote myself to making some kind of spiritual contribution. Although I also knew that I didn't want to be a pastor of a church. Mm-hmm. So I thought the only other option was to be an academic and study religion. So after finishing my bachelor's in human development and counseling psychology at Eckerd College, I had a graduate degree in religious studies from USF. And after grad school, I was doing some teaching at USF and also worked in the training department at the Juvenile Welfare Board. Mm. When a friend of mine mentioned that there was an open position in education and training at hospice. And I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll take that position for a year or so, learn what I can, and move on. And I ended up staying there for about 28 years because as a part of my orientation, I shadowed a chaplain. And it was like immediately I knew that's what I needed to be doing with my life. And so I worked for Suncoast Hospice for a long time as a chaplain, and it was an incredibly enriching experience. And over the years, I was promoted to the position of Director of Spiritual Care and then eventually got another position where the focus of my work was more administrative and leadership. And, you know, Beth, while these were really important and incredibly valuable things to do, I just really began to feel the tug of getting back to spiritual care. Mm. So in October of this year, I transitioned to a new role as the chaplain at Westminster Palms in St. Pete. And it's a really wonderful faith-based organization dedicated to serving from the heart, really serving from the heart and inspiring older adults to enjoy happy, healthful, purposeful lives. So I'm really loving it. It's a great community. So shout out to Westminster Palm residents and staff.
they are lucky to have you.
Well, so thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. Let's talk a little bit about faith. In the studies over the last decades, more and more people have started to describe their faith as personally spiritual, or that they have a belief in something greater than the natural world or in a type of universal connection. Mm-hmm. So they have faith, but not prescribed faith. Or no religious ideology or ritual that they embrace. Could you talk a little bit about what the term faith means to you?
Mm. That's a great question. And, you know, I think that's a position of real integrity when what you have grown up with no longer seems to be working for you. And here's how I see it. Religious institutions have historically been resistant to change. And it's easy to understand why, because we work hard to discern what is true and identify rituals and practices that inform and support our faith. And this really works well for sometimes for a long time. But the problem is that our understanding of ourselves, of each other, our understanding of the universe, it's not a static thing. It's a living thing, a breathing, growing, changing thing. And, you know, in the United Church of Christ, there's a saying that goes, don't put a period where God has placed a comma. God is still speaking. Yeah, it's interesting. So I think when religious institutions cling to the, quote, the way we've always done things, then they can slowly begin to become unable to meet the evolving spiritual needs of their congregants, and so they leave. And so I guess my concern is that many of us seem to think that the only alternative to the faith community that no longer meets our needs is to engage in a really individual kind of a la carte approach to spirituality. You know, we might go to a yoga class or take up some form of medication or meditation. Medication too, maybe. I don't know. Listen to podcasts about things that we're interested in. Sort of take a DIY approach to religion and spiritual life. And that is like infinitely better than abandoning spiritual life altogether. But I think, though, that we are missing out on some essential components of the religious experience, like, you know, being grounded in a particular spiritual text, a part of a tradition with a history, participating in a community of like-minded people and sharing those experiences, and even within that community, taking part, being a part of that critical work of refreshing and redefining the tradition in light of our current understanding. But you know, Beth, you mentioned faith. You know, what is faith? And I think that's a really important question too, because it seems to me that a lot of people seem to think that faith is the suspension of disbelief. That there are these incredibly unlikely propositions that in spite of our best judgment, we choose to believe in them. You know, and I don't think that could be further for the truth, at least for me. For me, faith refers to another way of knowing that has been de-emphasized after the Enlightenment, where reason and empiricism were really the stars of the show. You know, and I don't have anything against rational and empirical knowledge. I mean, it dramatically improves human life and provides a lot of amazing insights, but I think faith is another more intuitive way of knowing that connects us with the reality that underlies this phenomenal world and connects us all as manifestations of that reality. And so faith is what connects us to the good, you know, love and justice and peace and kindness. And to tie in with my musings about faith communities, being a part of one helps us to cultivate and practice that neglected way of knowing. So,
thank you for that answer. I want to go back to your involvement with end-of-life care. In your experience, what are some of the universal needs that emerge at the end of life, regardless of belief?
Yeah. You know, I think on the one hand, the needs that we all have in life, the need for meaning and purpose, the need to feel a sense of connection to ourselves, to the people in our lives that we love and are important to us, to sense some feeling of connection to a larger reality, whether we call that God or the universe or fate or whatever. Those are needs that are felt. We also, the way we all have the need for forgiveness and reconciliation, the need to have hope for a better tomorrow. All these things that we all need are present at the end of life as well, and perhaps present in a more acute and powerful way. I think what's unique to this stage of life, however, is the awareness not just that I'm dying, but there's a timeline. You know, my days are numbered, as they say. And so really facing this also creates some very specific needs. So some of those are like the need to engage in life review so that you can construct a narrative arc for your life that makes sense to you. Another is like the need to ensure that we've said everything we need to say to the important people in our lives. And really those important things tend to boil down to, I love you, please forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and goodbye in some form or another. I think the need to bring your business affairs to order and then to navigate the loss of professional and familial roles and identities that you've that have been an important part of your self-understanding over all these years, and then to finally come to a sense of peace and acceptance with what comes next.
How do you talk about meaning at the end of life with someone who doesn't think in religious terms? Is there a way to navigate language, or are there metaphors or frameworks that open doors to deeper conversation?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's actually a lot easier than you might think, because human beings are natural meaning makers. Huh. You know, and if you engage in real sincere open dialogue with someone, it doesn't take long before the things which give them a sense of meaning and purpose become very clear. And so that doesn't mean, however, that at the end of life we don't often have to recreate our meaning and purpose, mm-hmm. you know, because the limitations of the illness that we're experiencing will eventually make it so that the ways we used to contribute to the world were no longer available.
Right.
So, you know, that can create a real crisis for some people. But what I found is if they're open and able to grieve that loss and then reengage with what is possible in the present moment, then even in the midst of our dying, profound new sources of meaning can be found. You know, and I've seen that happen so many times.
I have a very personal question for you.
Yeah.
Has your own faith been influenced or changed by your experience in end-of-life care, or with your experience with people with varying belief systems?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. It's been profoundly impacted. And I don't know how it could not be impacted. If you really open yourself up, and if you're someone who has the privilege of coming alongside so many people as they face the end of their lives, I mean, it just provides the opportunity to explore the reality of your own mortality and to reflect on the fact that all those you love, that they too are going to die. And I think it's helped me to accept that death is a part of life. And that's saying something in our culture, because I think for the most part, we live in a pretty death-denying culture.
I would say so.
You know, but it's helped me to accept that this is just a part of life. And also it's inspired me to think and reflect not only on how I want to die, but also how I want to live, you know, because I'm aware that I will die. One of my favorite quotes is, if you know not when you will die or how you will die, how then shall you live? And so that's been very meaningful. But as far as other belief systems are concerned, I've been so enriched by exploring all the different faith traditions of the world, and have been personally deeply impacted by Hinduism and Buddhism, as well as my Judeo-Christian heritage. And, you know, what I've found is if we open ourselves up to truly engaging with other faith traditions, it doesn't have to involve like comparison and competition, like which one of us got it right, which one of us is the better religion. You know, it doesn't have to be that. It can be an adventure where seeing how other faith traditions believe and practice, and seeing those things really highlights aspects of your own faith tradition that maybe perhaps you weren't previously aware of. And it can result in some pretty incredible insights. So, you know, I continue to welcome engaging with people of other faith traditions to learn what they can teach me about my own.
Oh, that's a lovely answer. To close out, I'm wondering if you might have a ritual or an object or a piece of art or music that connects you to your faith, whatever that might be.
Yeah, another great question, and absolutely. I think if we're really serious about doing anything, we have to practice it, right? I mean, research has shown that if you want to master doing any new thing, it requires 10,000 hours of practice. So, you know, I think to a certain extent, the same applies to spiritual practices, because spiritual practices aren't really meant to be an add-on to our lives, one thing we do among many other things that we do. I think authentic and genuine spiritual practice is supposed to be the foundation, the framework for our living. And in order for it to become that for us, certain spiritual disciplines are needed to develop that spiritual perspective and mindset and to maintain it. And so for me, those are meditation, practicing mindfulness throughout the day, striving to love and serve others whenever possible, trying to take good care of the body that I've been given, reading inspirational spiritual texts and materials, and being involved in a spiritual community. And I think those are really essential practices that round out my own particular spiritual life.
Thank you so much for that. I wish we had more time. There's so much more I'd like to talk to you about. But that is all the time we have today. My thanks to Reverend Andrews for this wonderful discussion and to all of you for listening. I hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, keep the faith.